Good morning, and welcome to Greater Good. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix, from the Sun Sounds of Arizona studios. The Greater Good Science Center studies the psychology, sociology, and neuroscience of well-being, and teaches skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. And now, some articles from Greater Good. 10 scientific tips to make you better at conversation. A new book explores everything we think we know and often get wrong about having good conversations. By Kira M. Newman, July 16, 2025. As humans, we're talking to each other constantly. With all that practice, we must be pretty good at it, right? Not exactly. As a professor at Harvard Business School and author of Talk, The Science of Conversation and the Art of Being Ourselves, Allison Wood Brooks teaches people how to have better conversations. She also debunks the widespread myths and assumptions that cause us to have less than stellar interactions. In fact, many of our institutions about how to talk to each other can create awkwardness, misunderstandings, and missed opportunities. As Brooks explains, conversation is a skill, and research findings have a lot to say about how we can become better at it so our conversations are more enjoyable, more productive, and better at bringing us closer together. Here are 10 fascinating findings from Brooks' book for you to keep in mind the next time you're getting ready to chat with another human. Number one, preparing topics in advance makes conversations better. Do you think about what you're going to discuss with people in advance? Research by Brooks and her colleagues suggests that only 18% of us actually prepare topics for conversations, and half of us believe that doing so will make conversations less enjoyable. But even spending 30 seconds planning some talking points makes conversations more fluid, with less awkward transitions, fewer pauses, and less umming and ahing, her research suggests. It also makes people feel less anxious and more confident. In Brooks' Harvard classroom, her students often worry that prepping topics is embarrassing, manipulative, or just plain unnecessary. But year after year, they reliably find conversations about prepared topics to be more fun. Preparing topics doesn't mean that we need to be rigid about making sure to discuss each one. It just gives us an insurance policy for when conversation falters, and it can help us drift toward more meaningful discussions rather than defaulting to often easy, concrete topics that spring to our minds in the moment. Two, our intuitions about which topics make for a rewarding conversation are wrong. Brooks and her colleague, Mike Yeomans, gave 1,000 people a list of 50 topics to rate which would be the best for conversation, from favorite books to grief and loss to a perfect day, and then had people actually dive into those topics. The conversations that people ended up enjoying were not the ones that they predicted. For example, when did you last cry in front of another person? Anticipated as the second least enjoyable topic was in practice highly enjoyable to discuss. It's almost impossible to tell in advance whether a conversation topic will be good or bad, Brooks writes. 3. Switching topics more frequently makes conversations more enjoyable. In a study by Brooks and her colleagues, pairs of strangers either had conversations as they normally would or tried to get through 12 topics in 10 minutes. At the end of the day, those who tried to cover more ground enjoyed their conversations more, a bump from 5 to 6 on a scale of 7, and surprisingly, their conversations didn't seem to lack depth. In other research of 30-minute conversations online, more people thought they had discussed too few topics rather than too many, 20% versus 11%. Any hesitancy that we feel in the moment about changing the subject may be misguided. 4. People who ask questions are more likable. In a 2017 study by Brooks and her colleagues, people who asked more questions in a 15-minute conversation were better liked by their conversation partners. Similarly, in 4-minute speed dating conversations, singles who asked more follow-up questions were more likely to get a second date, and no one ever got to the point of asking too many questions. If you think you're already a great question asker, think again. According to Brooks's research, friends and daters both overestimated how many questions they asked in conversations. And if you're hesitant to ask certain questions that you might be curious about, you can relax a little. A 2021 study found that being asked sensitive questions about affairs, abortion, or money didn't make conversations unenjoyable or cause people to form bad impressions of the question asker compared to more mundane questions. One caveat is to be aware of what Brooks calls boomerasking. Posing a question simply because you want to answer it yourself, like, how was your weekend, when you have had an amazing Saturday night story to tell. In her 2025 study, she finds that these kind of questions make us appear insincere, egocentric, and uninterested in our conversation partner. 5. We're more hesitant to make jokes than we should be. In another 2017 study by Brooks and her colleagues, finds that we think humor goes wrong more often than it actually does. People underestimate how often attempts at humor go well, leavening the mood, drawing people closer, boosting perceptions of competence and status, she writes. When Brooks asked her students to record a conversation with their favorite person in the world to talk to, nearly all of those favorite people used a staple of the comedy toolkit, the callbacks. Callbacks are references to a topic from earlier in the conversation or earlier in the relationship, a kind of marker of shared memory and often a little inside joke. 6. We underestimate the power of compliments. In a 2021 study, researchers asked students what they thought about giving random compliments to strangers, then actually sent them out to say nice things to others on campus. The students were nervous. They thought they wouldn't be very good at giving compliments, and they worried that people might be bothered and uncomfortable. In reality, their worries were overblown, and they also underestimated how good it felt to receive a compliment. While Brooks cautions against giving compliments on people's physical appearance unless you know that they'll appreciate it, she highly recommends complimenting others on things you admire about them. 7. Apologies make us look good. In one study by Brooks and her colleagues, it found that apologies make us seem more trustworthy. When people apologized for the rain, a superfluous apology, before asking a stranger to borrow their phone, 47% said yes, compared to 9% without an apology. In other experiments, they found that people who make these superfluous apologies for traffic or bad luck are also seen as more likable. And in the realm of more substantive apologies, Brooks writes, doctors who apologize for their mistakes to patients and families are less likely to be sued. It turns out that taking responsibility is good luck. 8. We think we understand each other more than we do. A 2022 study found that when someone asked an ambiguous question in a conversation, both people thought that its real meaning was understood 70% of the time or more, when they were actually on the same page only 44% of the time. Oddly, participants still overestimated their shared understanding when they were speaking totally different languages, believing that meaning could be inferred simply from tone of voice. Brooks quotes playwright George Bernard Shaw in her book, quote, "The single biggest problem with communication is the illusion that it has taken place," unquote. 9. We have a hard time believing that people who disagree with us are actually listening. We often learn more from conversations than we expect to, and while the same thing is happening for other people, we don't seem to realize it. For example, if someone disagrees with us, we have a tendency to think that they must not be listening very well. Even when people acknowledge and show respect for our perspective and can articulate it clearly, we evaluate them as worse listeners if they disagree with our point of view compared to people who agree. And our assumptions about the other person affect how we act too, Brooks says, potentially contributing to today's social and political polarization. If you think people are out to persuade you rather than learn from you, you will behave in ways that are more likely to lead to conflict, which inhibits actual learning and escalates discord. 10. Conversations rarely end when anyone wants them to. If you're itching to get off the phone with a family member or worried that you're taking up too much of someone's time, you're not alone. According to a 2021 study of 932 conversations, conversations don't tend to end when both people want them to, or, for that matter, even when one person wants them to. In general, we aren't very aware of when our interlocutor wants to leave, and we underestimate how different the other person's preference is from ours. Ending conversations is a classic coordination problem that humans are unable to solve because doing so requires information that they normally keep from each other, the researchers conclude. About the author, Kira M. Newman is the managing editor of Greater Good. Her work has been published in outlets including The Washington Post, Mindful Magazine, Social Media Monthly, and Tech.co. She is co-author of the forthcoming The Science of Happiness workbook and co-editor of The Gratitude Project. You are listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. How do we find the good in a bad situation? A new study examines different ways of coping with stress to see what makes us feel better when we're struggling, by Cameron Scott, June 25th, 2025. To be happier when we're dealing with something tough, the common advice goes, we can consciously look for the bright side of life's challenges. For example, we might reframe the thought, why was I unlucky enough to have my bike stolen? As, I'm lucky to get some insurance money to buy the newer bike I've been wanting. And when we do this, we will likely feel better about the incident. But this popularized advice risks leaving the impression that we should be able to turn every negative into a positive. In reality, it can feel forced or even futile to tell ourselves upbeat stories about life's biggest hardships. In a recent paper published in the journal Emotion, Wake Forest University psychologist Christian Waugh and his colleagues suggest a more authentic way to alleviate difficult emotions in such situations. At the heart of this approach is something we sometimes forget about big stressors. They tend to come in complex packages. Take, for example, the COVID-19 pandemic that was Waugh and his colleagues' focus. The threat of illness was frightening, yet many of us also enjoyed more free time and built deeper interpersonal connections. When reflecting on the pandemic, research participants, mostly college students, were asked to break this prolonged stressor into 4 to 6 distinct components. Without being asked to find positive aspects, about 60% of participants did so, mentioning things like more time with family. Waugh and his colleagues then gave the participants a choice. They could try to alleviate their pandemic-related distress by reframing a negative component more positively, or spending more time focusing on a positive component. The participants wrote short essays. One participant reframed the negative experience of lacking spending money with, this means that I will not be as focused on objects and can focus my thoughts on friends and more. However, most people chose to focus on a positive component, and those who did reported more positive feelings afterwards. Because the stresses are complex, they're heterogeneous, Waugh says. Even if they're super negative, positive things can still happen. Another way to feel better is not to change the meaning of anything, but to zero in on the positive element and focus on that. This distinction might seem subtle, but it means that we don't have to feel pressured to feel grateful or optimistic about a difficult experience in its entirety. We're just invited to pay attention to some of the smaller good things that happen alongside it, things that we might have noticed already. Waugh and his colleagues ran several experiments, and even when faced with a more bite-sized challenge, specifically preparing an oral presentation that would be critiqued, participants were able to identify positive elements. There's something of a catch, though. Participants who listed more positive aspects were more likely to choose to elaborate on one of those rather than reframe a negative aspect. And those who engaged in this process reported less stress at the end of the experiment. But participants who scored high in personality traits like optimism and resilience were more likely to identify more positive components of stressors in the first place. In other words, the approach seems to offer more help to those who need it less. It may just come more naturally to people who cope well with difficulty. Still, Waugh suggests a practical way that people, even glass half-empty types, can make real-world use of his findings. He recommends that we identify distinct elements of a stressor in our lives to avoid ruminating on a single element, and then list the elements in two columns, marked good and bad. Just keep going until there's at least one thing in the good column, and then focus on that, he says. My studies suggest that that would work. About the author, Cameron Scott is a science writer and editor based in the Bay Area. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you Greater Good Magazine. And we have time for a Greater Good in Action practice. This one is entitled A Self-Compassion Break, a healthier way to deal with stressful situations. How to do it. Time required, 5 minutes. While it may be challenging to do this practice every time you face a stressful situation, an initial goal could be to try it at least once per week. Number one, think of a situation in your life that is difficult and causing you stress. For this practice, especially if you are new to it, it's better to choose something that is moderately difficult in your life rather than overwhelming. Two, call the situation to mind and get in touch with what happened or what you might think happened. Three, now say to yourself, this is a moment of suffering. This acknowledgement is a form of mindfulness, of noticing what is going on for you emotionally in the present moment, without judging that experience as good or bad. You can also say to yourself, this hurts, or this is stress. Use whatever statement feels most natural to you. Four, next, say to yourself, suffering is a part of life. This is a recognition of your common humanity with others, that all people have trying experiences and those experiences give you something in common with the rest of humanity, rather than mark you as abnormal or deficient. Other options for this statement include, other people feel this way, I am not alone, or we all struggle in our lives. 5. Now put your hands over your heart. Feel the warmth of your hands and the gentle touch on your chest and say, may I be kind to myself. You can also consider whether there is another specific phrase that would speak to you in that particular situation. Here are some examples. May I give myself the compassion that I need? May I accept myself as I am? May I learn to accept myself as I am? May I forgive myself? May I be strong? And may I be patient? This practice can be used any time of day or night. If you practice it in the moments of relative calm, it might become easier for you to experience the three parts of self-compassion: mindfulness, common humanity, and self-kindness, when you need them the most. You've been listening to Greater Good Magazine, coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer programmer, Babs Felix. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope that you have a wonderful rest of your day. And now, stay tuned for more interesting programming coming to you from Sun Sounds of Arizona.